Welcome to another episode of Working with Purpose, a show dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business and viewing leadership through the unique lens of the body of Christ. We're glad you joined us today, and we're in a series of topics called Questions in Business and Leadership. This series will continue our path to advance this new image of leadership that's based on the metaphor of an agile human body rather than a rigid machine. I also want to let you know you can join us in the conversation anytime at davidstarkcollective.com. You can find us on Twitter at Stark Collective. You can also listen to all of our podcasts and leave us a review on iTunes. I want to welcome back Justin. It's nice to have you back.
It's good to be back, Dave.
I know you've been down in Disneyland, or Disney World, rather.
Yeah.
And why don't you give us a little update about that? First thing I want to say, he's got the most adorable little girls in the world. I got to meet him this weekend. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic, Justin.
Yeah, we like him a lot, too. We did. We took a little sabbatical down to Disney World, to the Land of the Mouse. And my girls are almost 6 and now just 4. So they're at that age where everything is very magical in the magical kingdom. And loved it. And, they had a great time, and we spent a week there, which is a long time to be in Disney World.
Yeah.
As a parent. As a kid, it's not long enough.
Right.
but it was in my head how things have changed. I mean, I hadn't been back there, for years and years. And, we talk about on this show how, it's better to look at business as a agile body versus a rigid machine. And Disney does a fantastic job of doing that. Mm-hmm. And they have this magic band that you wear now on your wrist that identifies you in the park, and it's your way of paying for things and going on rides, and
wow.
It's your hotel key. They've really thought through the experience in a way that is extremely human centered, and they're very aware of the pain points and the problems that you as parents have, as well as you, the opportunities that you as kids have.
Mm-hmm.
It really is fantastic. And so, the service designer in me was geeking out about that experience on multiple levels.
Yes.
Like, one of my favorites is we went in to get a meal at Belle's Castle, mm-hmm. right? The Beast's Castle,
yeah.
The Beast and Belle, I guess both of them. So we go in there, we order our food, and at the end they just say, okay, well, pick any table and we'll bring it out to you. And when someone, usually says that to you, you want to reach for like a number to put on your table,
yes.
right, to signify, here I am. But you don't need to do any of that, and you don't realize it until you sit down. And you're like, I wonder how they're going to find me. And then you look down at your wrist and you're like, oh, yeah. They know where I'm sitting. And so someone comes by about 5 minutes after you sit down, confirms your order, and then pretty soon your food's there.
Wow.
It is magical, Dave.
It is.
It's magical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm super glad to be back. I'm looking forward to this question, and let's jump on in.
Okay, let's do. I'm going to start out because Justin and I are both consultants. Obviously, we're radio hosts, and we're also lifelong learners, which is how we first got together long ago. But consequently, we're always in the lookout for insights about business in an interconnected world. By the way, you could help us on the platform with that if you'd like. I came across a recent book titled, Justin, called Strategy That Works. It's by a man named Paul Leanward and Cesar Mirardi.
You got to roll the R. Cesar.
That's it. It's a HBRP, in other words, Harvard Business School Publications, 2016, answers this question. How do you close the gap of strategy and execution in an interconnected world? They opened the book talking about a recent survey they did in top business leaders about this topic, and the high-level findings about how business leaders are succeeding in answering the question are as follows. They did their own brand new survey. About 2/3 of the leaders they talked to said their capabilities do not support how they create value in the workplace. About 2/3. About 9 out of 10 said they were missing major opportunities in the market because of that misalignment. 80% said their strategy was not well understood, even within their companies. And only 8% said they're good at both strategy and execution. Those are dismal results. Remind me of a modified famous quote of military plans. I can't remember the original guy. And the enemy for business settings. The quote says that business plans do not survive the first contact with customers.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about it. How do you close the gap between strategy and execution?
Yeah, I think it's such a great question too, because everyone has this issue, and leaders out there it'll resonate pretty quickly. And I'll throw another quote at you too. That's also, I think, derivative of that, but it's my buddy Mike Tyson.
Yes.
Right. And Mike, he always liked to say, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Same thing.
It's the same thing. I mean, the best laid plans, and they never go according to how you think they're going to, because, you know, humans happen and ecosystems happen, and this, you can't predict the future.
That's right.
And strategy in an interconnected world ultimately is much different. But again, that's our thesis here, in that, you know, if you see business as a agile body instead of a rigid machine, you start to expect change and diversity of thought and behavior. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you can't plan for it, but your planning is much different in this world.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Justin. I had an interesting conversation this week. A friend of mine has been a venture capitalist for decades, and he's doing various things, but kind of as a connected adjunctly to a bike maker's business. And he was talking about kind of his conversations with them, because they're really good at the frames. They're spectacular at the frames, and they've had the go-go phase around that. And then they decided, okay, since we're good at that, we're invincible, right? So they tried to jump outside that core capability and say, well, let's just make the best bikes. Well, bikes are much more than frames. Mm-hmm. And now he advised them in saying, you know, you're way outside your capability piece here. So when they tried to execute on this new strategy, you know, basically they're getting bombed.
Yeah.
And they're going down the hills, because they didn't stay with that which was really core to them. They couldn't execute on all the other things that great bikes are about, rather than staying in their lane in terms of frames.
That's right. I mean, good pun there too, by the way. I don't know if you intended that.
I didn't.
Staying in your lane. So a quick note to those of you that might have just joined us. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Please visit us anytime and join the convo at davidstarkcollective.com. Find us on Twitter at Stark Collective, or listen to our podcast and write us a good review on iTunes.
So let's get on the solution side of this a little bit, Justin. How do we close the gap?
How do we, Dave?
Well, here we go.
I don't know. Let's get to it.
Let's go to the authors of Strategy That Works. They suggest there are five unconventional leadership acts that are counter to conventional wisdom, that actually close this gap in a real way across companies as they've talked with people, right? So they set up leadership acts by contrasting them to conventional wisdom. And there's two charts that we're going to put in the notes, I think, that really talk about the difference between these and how you really do strategy and execution in a connected world. And let's talk about those five ways if you want to.
Yeah, sounds good. And now, tables are kind of hard to illustrate with on, you know, on the radio or right. on a podcast. So yep. We'll put this on our show notes so you can actually see the tables as well. But we'll try to do a good job of letting you know what they are. The first table that they talk about is, so it's these five conventional wisdom points and their unintended consequences when they're not done properly.
Right.
And so the first one is a focus on growth. And I think every leader usually starts with this one, like, we got to grow. And the unintended consequences, you know, getting trapped on this growth treadmill and chasing market opportunities that you have no means to really chase.
Yes.
It ends up poorly. The second one is pursuing functional excellence. You know, we want to build these really great fiefdoms and functional departments, but striving to be world-class at everything but mastering nothing. That's the unintended consequence here. You know, so treating the external benchmarks as the path to success. And personally, that's one of my bigger pet peeves. Like, you know, when you see, well, the benchmark in this industry is this, that gets you to status quo. That right. doesn't actually get you to, you know, something above and beyond.
Yeah, it reminds me of the flywheel versus the doom loop in Collins, which is really stay focused.
That's
and
right.
get great at it.
Yep. Yep. The third is reorganizing to drive change. A lot of leaders just reorganize to reorganize instead of with purpose. The fourth one is going lean, which is cutting costs across the board kind of unilaterally, not taking into account which things are really core to your business.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is becoming agile and resilient, which sounds great, and we talk about it all the time. But if you're constantly reacting to market changes and shifting direction based on, you know, which way the wind blows, all of a sudden you're no longer in control of your business.
Right.
So that's the five conventional wisdom points and their unintended consequences popularly. So now, Dave, on the second table, they unpack that with the five acts. So you want to roll.
Let's do an overview of those because we're going to be looking at those the whole program.
Yep.
So rather than focus on growth, they would say you commit to an identity. In other words, differentiation and growth by being clear-minded about what you can do best. You know, again, that reaches back to the hedgehog of Collins. But the point is differentiation is the ballgame in an interconnected world, not straight at growth for growth's sake, as we talked about, right? So they juxtapose pursue functional excellence with this. Translate the strategic into everyday things. Build and connect the cross-functional capabilities that deliver your strategic intent. In other words, here's our primary capabilities. Now, how do we surround those primary capabilities with things that support that primary capability as opposed to going into areas we just aren't excellent at? So that keeps the strategic intent tight, and it keeps you augmenting that which is core along the way. The third one is reorganize to drive change. Actually, put your culture to work. Celebrate and leverage your cultural strengths. We'll talk a lot about that. So rather than reorganizing to where your culture's confused or defeated, if you will, rather than go lean, they say cut costs to grow stronger. Prune what doesn't matter to invest more in what it does. There's that horticultural image.
Yeah, nice biological metaphor there.
We'll get there. Yeah, it's also Jesus, by the way. So and then become agile and resilient. Shape your future. Reimagine your capabilities and create demand and realign your industry on your own terms. So how do you actually double down and expand on those original capabilities so that you can actually shape the future as opposed to, like you said, reacting to it all the time? So that's kind of an overview of what kind of where we're going to go on the show here.
That sounds great. Well, let's before we go to the break, we've got a minute or two here. Why don't we dive into the first one with focus on growth, Dave, and then we'll leave the rest as a cliffhanger.
You bet. So obviously, conventional wisdom says that, but the problem is that when you begin to pursue markets outside your capabilities and differentiators, you're now in a whole new competitive space, which is filled with other people where you've got it.
It's scary out there.
Experience curve to actually get good at it, let alone excellent at it, right? And so on the other hand, the authors say, I got to create an identity. Who are we and what do we do best, especially? And then we're going to grow and stay competitive from that differentiating place. So we're constantly pushing on the differentiation. They actually were engaged with a possible client the other day, actually. I talked about this bike business. And, of course, what happened is they got off their – they got off the main thing. And so consequently, it really – they could have stayed on the other path and, maybe they'll get back there again too, by the way, and really see significant growth rather than deciding we're going to play a bigger game where there's already huge bike companies that they've got to defeat and they aren't even ready to kind of take that on. So,
Dave, could we say that by trying to put the wheels on, their wheels actually came off?
That's excellent. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Here comes the wheels off.
Exactly. Cautionary tale. So when we talk about focusing on growth and finding a identity, one of the things that I think could be confusing is that people may interpret that saying, hey, just stick to your knitting and do the same thing over and over and over again. That's not what we're saying. Mm-hmm. In fact, look at Google. Google is an interesting example because they started with paid search and kind of building the browser or the search engine of the future.
Yes.
They've expanded into all kinds of things, including autonomous cars. There's a common thread there, and we'll leave that as a cliffhanger. But again, they have an identity that makes those two be connected.
Yes.
And we'll get to that after the break.
Sounds great.
So, well, let's do that. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute. We'll be discussing the five acts to help you close the gap between strategy and execution. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David and Justin. We'll be right back.
Spiritual principles have become common in the workplace, whether or not managers and leaders acknowledge the source. It's a great time to be a Christian in business, and that's why Working with Purpose is bringing you this conversation. Working with Purpose is a program dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. We'd love to have you part of the discussion. You can dialogue with David and Justin on these important topics, sign up to receive blog posts, get updates on upcoming events, and more through their website, davidstarkcollective.com, or find them on Twitter, @StarkCollective. David and Justin are also available to speak on a variety of topics related to working with purpose and will help you and your business go beyond discussing these concepts to putting them into action. Find out more now by going to davidstarkcollective.com and open either the speaking or consulting pages of the platform. Now let's get back to part two of Working with Purpose.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to a show Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Please join the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com, or you can find us on Twitter at Stark Collective, or listen to all of our podcasts and write us a review on the iTunes. We love those things. And so they're all there, too. Now, let's jump back into the question, Justin. How do we close the gap between strategy and execution? And we're working our way through these five acts here. And let's go to this second one and talk about that, which is, they said, rather than pursuing functional excellence, which is just to try to be good at things you're not good at originally, we're suggesting that the second thing they're saying is you've got to have a niche, and that differentiation is a niche. And companies, rather than just trying to grab more and more market share, it's really, you know, that becomes a giant pie eating contest, right? I don't know if you've been to a pie eating contest, mm-hmm. but when you have, there's some people that are really fat, right? And there's some people that get really sick trying to get really fat. And at most everybody else is just hungry, right, around the thing. And what I mean by that metaphorically in terms of what we're talking about here is that when you just go after the pie, rather than saying, no, how about if I add to the banquet here? What is the uniqueness that I can bring to that table? That's how you stay competitive and how your execution will actually continue to happen, rather than just saying I'm going to follow whatever this market share is, even if it's not what I'm good at along the way. So that's a kind of a big deal in this. And so another really good image in this for me is natural systems. Because I've done a lot of work in ecology in my background here. And when I was, for example, when you're looking at the tidal wave and the tides going out and in, there are very specific niches that things fit into. So the way animals, they don't focus on scale. They're not trying to scale. What they do is they're trying to find a niche where they're better than everybody else. And that's how come they can take over whatever it is in that part of the market, if you will, within the tidal pools.
No, that's great. And coming back to our Google example, too, I mean, their unique ability to do creative engineering and to pair that with experimentation has really led to their success, and in ways where you wouldn't expect it. And they probably didn't expect it either. And again, that's, you know, that's their way to, they've allowed themselves to create these new capability systems, but it's true to their identity. It's creative engineering with a lens of experimentation on it. So that works in, you know, building a search engine as well as building an autonomous car.
Yes.
So it's a great way or a good example of point number two here.
Yeah, and that's that core purpose and their core capabilities around that. Yep. So let's look at number three, which the conventionalism is to reorganize your organization around your culture. And reorganize around your culture, just keep reorganizing regardless of your culture. The author suggests that reorganizing is trying to change the culture in fundamental ways goes against the grain and is very confusing. It's slow at best and sometimes very unsuccessful. The alternative is to build on the parts of the culture of the future and keep leveraging those in greater ways. You know, I one of the examples they use is Ecolab. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about the CEO there who expanded exponentially, but he went back to the core part of the culture he wanted to reemphasize, which is the front line was connecting to the customers in significant ways. So he kept reinforcing that. That was part of the original culture of Ecolab. They kept going back to that and back to that. And that, therefore, they were getting very specific information that kept them competitive in the services specifically that they were operating under. And so that's just even a local hero relative to this point.
Right. You know, one thing we talk about that I think is a interesting nuance here is that culture is usually interpreted as something that you can directly change. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe to a degree you can, but you have to unpack that a little bit and understand that culture really is an outcome.
Yes.
You know, and it's the foundation of which is, you know, your beliefs, your strategic intent, your philosophy, those are the things that ultimately lead to a culture. So if you're trying to unpack that and learn, you know, what you can change, change. Don't necessarily think you can make huge changes in culture per se, but it's the fundamental things underneath it that you need to address.
That's great.
Right?
Good. Yep. And emphasize the good and build on it there, huh?
Yeah. That's right.
So let's go to the fourth one, which is they call it going lean. Going lean by cutting costs across the board is a recipe for disaster. I've seen this happen many times. If you're not investing in the things that you do well simultaneously, you know, and this is the analogy with organisms is you're starving the whole organism, right? Actually, they use a biblical metaphor here, which is pruning, right? And Jesus says that, you know, that he's this is in John 15, but he talks about when growth happens, you know, the Spirit prunes that there might be more fruit. And what's behind that is that on fruit trees, they only produce apples or whatever on first-year wood, and which means that if the wood has been there more than 1 year, it won't produce apples. So that's when you see pruning in apple orchards, they just go right back to almost the trunk. Why? Because the fruit is going to be on that first-year wood that comes out afterwards. So you prune that you might bear more fruit because you get more branches that are first-year wood and therefore apples along the way. And the point being here is that we've got to cut off, or in other words, cut costs on the stuff that is not bearing fruit. But that leaves an energy, right, in the trunk so that you can bear a lot more fruit, right? So you've got to invest in, support, develop, you know, put the resources that you're now not putting in, that you've cut the costs around. You got to invest in the things that you are doing well.
That's right. And going lean is a really trendy thing in business. You know, you hear about lean manufacturing and lean design and lean startup. And I'm a huge fan of all of that. And I think that's the right way to handle lean, which is taking a look at what others need and being able to create an MVP or minimal viable product to address it and then to learn quickly.
Yes.
So you're taking the right steps to be lean. But on the other side, just unilaterally being lean and cutting across everything is a poor way to do it because it's not purposeful and you accidentally, you know, you cut too deep. And so you end up hurting your own capabilities and stunting your future growth. So, again, it's a fine balance, but there is a good side of lean, and then there's also the indiscriminate side of lean, which is actually harmful.
That's right. So both ways in that, and that's important.
Yep.
So let's look at number five, which is be agile and resilient. First of all, we love agile and resilient.
Yes,
right?
We do.
And it's stuff that really helps. It's very much a living systems metaphor who are agile and resilient along the way. But along with being reactive to all of those in positive ways, here's the problem is that the speed of change is so fast. If you want to put it kind of in an image here, it's that metaphorically, we're all dealing with climate change. And climate change is, in other words, disruptive innovation happening a lot, right, in terms of business language. And the problem is that most animals can't adapt to climate change. They can a little bit if it goes slow enough, but the reality is they're, you know, wiping out species, and we're seeing that going on in a lot of different places in the world right now. Human beings have that unique ability as human brains to actually adapt, you know, very severely when they need to, because they can put on clothes or they can, you know, adjust this or that or, you know, create atmosphere-controlled situations, whatever they do. So humans have that unique ability to deal with dramatic change, which means that along the way in business, you are going to be agile and resilient, but you behind the scenes, you got to think about, but what happens if this whole thing really gets disrupted? And are we preparing for those kinds of events also? Is there a point along the way?
Yes.
So I want to kind of close down this whole thing and talk about how does this relate to the scriptures? Well, what I want to suggest here is that all of their unique activities assume behind that a living system view of reality and business, and specifically a human living system. Okay, so let me do some connecting here. First of all, what they're suggesting is that DNA doesn't change very drastically. Obviously, we can change DNA a little bit now, but the truth is it doesn't change much, which means our uniqueness that we've been created with is something we're supposed to maximize, you know, fearfully and wonderfully made, as the Psalms put it, and not try to fundamentally go off that DNA. It's staying with the DNA, if you will. The body is an interconnected series of capabilities that adapt through the use of very developed brain and make major adaptions within the reality of their own uniqueness. In other words, the brain can adjust things in very significant ways for human beings to be able to respond even to dramatic events. And as we saw, the rest of the animal kingdom is, or even vegetative kingdom, cannot be a part of that, right? So it's very much a body image in terms of being able to do that. Maximizing strengths and managing around weaknesses is how people survive. That was way back in First Break All the Rules. But 1 Corinthians 12 tells me, if I'm a kneecap, don't try to be an arm. And by the way, you're going to need the arm to be connected to, but don't try. The very fact that you're a kneecap means you're not going to be good. That's a whole bunch of other things. Right back to 1 Corinthians 12 in terms of what that means. And obviously, there's a calling we would suggest both for individuals and businesses, and it's about staying true to those callings along the way. Well, we're glad you joined us today. We're in this series on questions in business and leadership. You've been listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer, and we're going to explore topics around the intersection of faith and business through the lens of the body of Christ. By the way, at next week, we're going to look at the question of how do you figure out the places where your services and products are serving needs you didn't ever expect, places where they're actually responding to it. How do you deal with that in terms of business itself? That's what we're going to look at. Again, you can look at our podcasts on davidstarkcollective.com or at Stark Collective. For Justin Royer and David Stark, we're glad you tuned in. See you next week.